for leaders, be aware of the level of influence you have. Your words and your behaviors affect people. People don't need us to be perfect. They need us to be authentic.
Welcome to Vet Life Reimagined, another unique episode for you in that our guest is not a veterinary professional, but has worked in the veterinary industry for over 15 years in a very unique way. It actually started with a challenge, but our guest, Rob Best, is a behavioral science expert focusing in leadership and positive impact. He has been a mentee and friend of some of the big greats in these areas like Tom Drucker and Janine Driver, which has allowed him to work in multiple industries. But he started to bring his unique skills to veterinary medicine in 2009 and has loved it ever since. In this episode, we'll talk about what emotional intelligence really means and how we can learn practical tips to make sure our influence is positive. We discuss how our body language gives us away, how we can learn to be more self-aware and improve our self-regulation, and how you, no matter the level of your authority, can make a positive impact in your work culture. Rob gives you tips on how to relieve stress quickly and how to feel more confident. Such a great conversation. So let's get to it with Rob Best. You don't have the typical background of a lot of our guests that are on Vet Life Reimagined. And so what was your life and your vision for yourself, your dreams, before you stumbled into the veterinary industry?
You know, it's pretty interesting. I just came from a career fair for an intermediate school, and I didn't know what to talk about. There was another table that was there for veterinary medicine, and I remember being their age and having no idea what I wanted to do. Got into high school, had no idea what I wanted to do. Got into college, had no idea what I wanted to do, right? I was good with a basketball though. So it paid for an education, and I at least understood what good decision-making was, right? Through some good mentorship and parenting. And so I kept playing basketball. It got me through college. I kept playing after college and still had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew that I didn't want to sit behind a desk. So at some point, I met somebody who worked in the world of consulting, and they offered me an opportunity to receive some mentorship and work on some projects that happened to relate to leadership and behavioral sciences. And the very first project happened to be in human medicine. And I really enjoyed the process of learning how to help people have a positive influence on other individuals, on teams, and seeing organizational results that came from that. So that was my entry into what a working world looked like for me. And just as I was getting my feet wet and starting to really understand what I was doing and beginning to do it somewhat well, I met somebody who worked in the veterinary industry. And they said, you know, I think you might enjoy working in this field. Have you ever given it a thought? And this became a 4-year-long conversation, of which they offered me a job a couple of times and I said no. And then they recognized how to reverse engineer my thought process. And instead of asking, they offered me a challenge. And they said, you know, I don't think you could do what you do successfully with a group of veterinary doctors in an animal hospital. And now it's a challenge. And I said, okay, well, let's go for 1 year and see if this works. And that was 15 years ago. Here we are.
So that says a lot about you too, that you're one of the ones that likes the challenge approach, which is, I think that can be good. It can be fun. What I love that you do, even when you first started, when you were seeing the impact of positive influence on an organization and how that was your spark of, oh, wow, this is cool. That can translate to so many different industries. Like you said, you started human medicine, we're talking about veterinary medicine, but you also consult with very different organizations. You've mentioned working more on like a government level as well. So what are some of your experiences just kind of looking at the diversity of how a lot of the things that you talk about, leadership, positive impact, are influential and are so cross-functionally relevant?
It's human behavior is human behavior. And I, of course, operate in the world of sanity. So I don't blur the lines. I'm not a psychologist or a psychotherapist. I'm not a mental health professional. I'm someone who has learned the neuroscience of human behavior, specifically in how it's applied to the world of leadership and leadership development. There was a very unique moment where I also received an introduction to a woman named Janine Driver. She's a fascinating person to look up, especially women, any women leaders who have an interest in where some additional resources, Google Janine Driver. And Janine is a former operative with the ATF. And she turned her ATF career as a secondary career into this world of body language, statement analysis, language theory, deception detection, and she became world renowned. Her first two books were both New York Times bestsellers. She's the person you would see on television. She, you know, became buddy-buddy with Anderson Cooper, and she was on NBC Today and all these other programs, right? A regular on CNN. And somebody introduced us. They thought that there was a possible chemistry, and they were right. So I became a student of Janine's, and then a mentee of Janine's, and then a friend, and now a colleague. So from time to time, I get to ride Janine's coattails and gain access to her network and some of the work that she does. And this includes people like another incredible woman leader named Lena Sisko, who's the former interrogator from Guantanamo Bay. She was the one who was interrogating the Taliban after 9/11. And this is a naval intelligence officer who was trained by the Marines. So by association with people like Janine and Lena, now we're talking about government intelligence and human influence, reading and influencing human behavior at a very high level. So after becoming more of a friend and then a colleague with people like Janine and Lena, I was learning how to bridge these high-level human behaviors with influencing business leadership. And in veterinary medicine, it simply made conversations a little easier for me because I was able to understand, one, what was behind the behaviors, and two, how to bridge what would be a teaching moment for leaders to understand a little bit more about themselves and what their behaviors might be telling, and how to regulate behavior so they have a positive influence on the individual or the team that they're responsible for. So through Lena and Janine and that world, it just opened doors for all sorts of other industries, you know, beginning with theirs and in government. And then for me, it ends up translating into, gosh, transportation engineers or office design companies or architecture firms. And then, of course, when it comes to just one-on-one working with a leader, industries, are you a leader? Are you an executive leader? Are you looking to grow your leadership capabilities? Now we can toss out any industry altogether and just discuss, well, one-on-one, what do our behaviors mean? How are we influencing? What can we do to be more intentional, et cetera? So that time period where I got to spend some quality time early on with Janine was incredible. And now I get to be her backup. You know, if she has a TV gig and she's double booked, I get the call. So if people like the crime TV stuff, you know, tune into Court TV at 8 p.m. Eastern from time to time, and you'll see me on there profiling criminals, or at least criminal suspects, and celebrities who might be in the news from time to time.
And then you also work with veterinarians. I think these human skills, the understanding body language and how that influences just the people around you, whether it's at work or at home, right? It applies because we're all humans. And I think that's really exciting. I want to go back to what you said. You said someone, you weren't the one with the idea of coming into the vet industry. Someone came to you and teased the idea. So first of all, I want to call out that individual because how wonderful that they were able to see this opportunity for the vet industry. But do you mind sharing what was it specifically that they were interested? Like, what was the challenge? What were they trying to accomplish?
Well, I'll say there's one layer here that is worthy of disclosing, which the person in veterinary medicine had a background in youth education. I happen to work in a nonprofit area of my life as well with teenage entrepreneurs. So the original introduction was, hey, you both support kids and you might have some chemistry there. That's where our conversation began. As it quickly evolved, the challenge was veterinary medicine is evolving. And the business of veterinary medicine is becoming more mature. There might be an opportunity for the industry to begin recognizing people with business backgrounds as a value add if we can create opportunities for them to enter our industry in a successful manner. So can someone with the business background and no veterinary knowledge or education enter our industry in a way that allows them to learn the language, learn the culture, not just of a hospital, but really of the industry, and then also become effective with their business leadership? And of course, everything from your academic basics, your spreadsheets and your P&Ls, and to the actual people leadership side. That was his original thinking. He, for whatever reason, thought I might be that test subject. If someone from the world of business can be effective in our industry without industry experience, let's test that theory. Let's record the experiences that occur. And if it works, maybe we can replicate this and create a model that invites people into our industry to help support the business side while we practice quality medicine. So there was more of a full chapter to that story, if you would.
Yeah, no, that makes great sense. And you are 100% accurate. It just continues to be more and more true today, the evolution of veterinary medicine. Business models are changing and evolving. Awareness of innovation and just change in general is all here. And I think more and more people are embracing it, understanding whether they like it or not. I don't know, but they're embracing it because they know it's here. So what did you find? I mean, if you were the business person, what were you finding out about veterinary medicine and that relationship between leadership, business, and the medical side of things?
I found a lot of things. First of all, it wasn't a one-year entry for me. I fell in love with it within months, mostly because of the people. The animals are the easy part, right? I'm an avid amateur wildlife photographer. I've done that for decades. And I've always had animals in my life. I was the person that gravitated to the animal instead of the other people, right? So I had that part was already ingrained in me. It wasn't a necessary part of the conversation. The people part was unknown and unexpected. The passion and the desire that people have in this industry is what really captivated me. And that was the first few months that were easy to lean into and fall in love with. Maybe after the first full year, I began to understand a little about the industry, but it was 2 or 3 years before I could really speak with some sort of confidence that, okay, I'm starting to get it now. Even at that point, it was like, I'm just really learning. However, my confidence was beginning to grow. And one of the significant components that I recognized that influenced me in addition to the people piece was the part that was lacking for people, which was the leadership. And this is from hospital leadership, where we know the history of the model, right? The person who was there longest is the next person up. And it's not true in all the hospitals today, but that's still the history. And so we have people in leadership positions, whether they're leads, tech managers, CSR managers, or hospital managers or hospital administrators who grew up in the hospital. There's still a lack of consistency for academic education in business and leadership, or a formalized process to help develop their leadership talents, of which they have. They've got the talents. However, they haven't perhaps had access or haven't known where the access is for resources in developing those talents. And then the other piece, of course, is the doctors. You're a doctor in a hospital. whether you like it or not, you are a leader. It comes with the territory. And most doctors today understand that. It doesn't mean that they've received the education or the development. However, they understand that. I'd say much better today than even just 10 years ago. There's a better understanding that that's a reality. And it was a massive gap. Maybe the most challenging work that I did in those first couple of years was helping to bridge doctors with leadership skills and capabilities so they can help positively influence the teams around them for the results they were most interested in gaining, whether it was a more proactive team or being able to go home on time at the end of the day or anything in between. So that for me, and of course I'm biased because my work was in leadership. However, that was a really big gap that I recognized early on.
And along with leadership, like you said, there's understanding body language and how things impact people. What are some of the top things that you could kind of bucket of, like, these are the things that we worked on? So for example, maybe emotional intelligence. So what are some things that you worked on that has a language behind it? And what does that look like for veterinary medicine?
You're right. This one's hard to summarize. So I'll give context and then I'll give a couple like low-hanging pieces of fruit to grab onto, and we can see where we go from there. And the context is this. On average, we miss 70% of the information that's available to us every day. Just us being human, we are missing 70% of the information available to us. Okay, so let's say we now know that statistic, and some moments during some days, we can now become a little more aware of what's around us. And with the awareness of what's around us, we can also become more intentional with how we're responding to that environment, whether it's the temperature or the person or the dog. Next step is think of a tree, and the roots of this tree are equivalent to our intentions. The trunk of this tree is equivalent to our body language. Our intentions are always 100% of the time seen in our body language. It cannot be masked. The branches of the tree are equivalent to our thoughts, and the leaves are equivalent to our words. And sometimes those leaves are big and bright and beautiful, and sometimes they fall to the ground and mean nothing. The thoughts can waver and go in different directions, and sometimes multiple directions off of one line, but that trunk is what stays consistent and is always connected to our intentions. So if we're aware of that environment, we're a little more aware of the temperature, the people, the pets. With this awareness, what are my intentions? Are my intentions to help this person feel more comfortable? Is it to help this dog feel more fear-free? Is it to lighten the temperature in the room for the group of people? Whatever those intentions are, they're going to be seen in your body language, which will include, if you feel really frustrated and you just don't want to be there and you're toughing your way through it, go have a moment in the mirror and leave that moment in the mirror and go have a more authentic moment with your team. If we're talking about somebody who's in leadership and it's your responsibility to have a positive influence in that environment. So step one, know that your intentions are directly connected to your body language and you can't fake it. The reason that's important is if you try to fake it and you don't release that someplace else, if the intentions aren't where they need to be as a leader, then what's going to occur is you'll use positive language, you'll use positive words, but you will be incongruent with your behaviors. And the average person may not know exactly what it is that's off, but something's going to feel off, right? They're going to have what I like to call their BS barometer will go off. And again, they won't know what it is, but they know something just doesn't feel right. And sometimes it might be as simple as when someone says, you know, did you have a great weekend? You know, tell me about your weekend. And you say, yeah, you know, the weekend was amazing. It was one of the best weekends I've had in a long time. My words are saying yes, and my body's saying no. There's a lack of congruency, and I might be completely unaware of it, when in reality, it was an awful weekend. I needed one more day of rest. I don't want to be back in the hospital right now. I want to be here and support you, but I need one more day before I'm here. That's what my real intentions are. But I'm trying to say, yeah, everything is good, but it's not good, right? Like, I can't mask that. I can't fake it. So that's the first step. Just be aware and be congruent. Understand that your intentions are connected. So be cautious and be authentic. The next step is, yeah, along the lines of emotional intelligence, awareness is the first of those five components. We just addressed that. Being aware and more regulated with your behaviors, well, that's the second part of emotional intelligence. It's now that I'm self-aware, how do I self-regulate? Some of these easy body language opportunities to self-regulate, just keeping mindfulness of, start with our hands. Some of us are more animated. We speak with our hands and some are not. Some of us fidget, some don't. Like we have a difference of baselines. We're all just a little different. However, beyond those initial norms, let's be aware of some specific movements that affect people around us. Again, especially if you are a person in leadership or if you are a doctor, because your behaviors are much more polarizing. When we want to make a point, sometimes we get excited and we might say, okay, but wait, look, listen to what comes next. This right here, this is my right hand. And this is something that you can remember. It's called right to fight, left to love. Right to fight, left to love. When you get excited and you turn with your right hand, you lead with your right shoulder and you start pushing down, this is very aggressive. Even if it's excited and you're smiling, this is, you can even feel it. Like look right in the camera. If you're looking at me right, like even without words, like you can feel the aggression here. Be cautious with these palms down gestures. The right hand, this is right to fight. It's very aggressive. You see this a lot with people on TV when they're being interrogated or when reporters are asking them tough questions. Look at the politicians that are coming up with all of these elections this year. Watch when they really get challenged at the podium, how many of them go right to fight. When they really feel challenged, they say, look, let me tell you what's what, right? The left to love, this is the switch. Instead of going palms down, either right to fight aggressive, or maybe even when you get a compliment, you say, oh, stop it. You literally push the compliments away. Like, no, we want to reverse that. Give an open palm, right? Invite compliments in and go full switch from right to fight to left to love. If we want to introduce information or invite information in a welcoming manner that is felt with total congruency, it's left to love. It's an open palm that's inviting in. And the love piece, this is my left side of the body. We're literally leaning from our heart. Intentions, body language are connected. Without knowing it, our bodies will turn right when we're aggressive. They'll turn left when we are accepting something that might be in a loving state of friendliness, if you would. So right to fight, left to love. Those are quick, easy wins for us. One more little one, and then we can go wherever direction we'd like from here is, I mentioned when we get excited, if you want to know if someone is really excited versus they're pretending to be excited, if they're standing up, and anyone who's watching, next time you stand up, you do this, you'll feel it right away. A natural movement that most of us will do if we're capable of standing and our feet are in good health, we rise up on our toes. We get really excited, like, oh my gosh, that was so cool. Did you see that? Right? And the one thing about body language is you can't unsee it. So this little moment right here, if this is all you take from today, right to fight, left to love, and when somebody gets excited, I guarantee in the next 24 hours, you're going to see it and you're going to say, oh my gosh, that guy Rob from Dr. Sprinkles, like, that's that thing they were talking about. You can't unsee it. It's so cool.
I love that. I had heard about the palms up is more of a welcoming trust move, is the palms up. But I like the left hand too, because I always feel awkward, like, what am I supposed to do like this? So I like the left hand. I like that a lot. And you're right. You can, even when somebody walks into a room, just like, you know, I'm going to more doctor's appointments right now. So, I mean, you can just tell if the doctor is coming in and she's same doctor, but I've seen her multiple ways of where she's got 30 plus cases that day. And so you can just feel her stress coming in. And I think what you said too, when we were chatting before, was that self-regulation aspect of emotional intelligence is actually the hardest part for people to usually get. And Which is interesting because I've also heard people talk about how many people have lack of self-awareness. So thinking about, oh goodness, it gets harder in self-regulation. But it is really, really important. So those little memory tricks that can kind of help us, because I think too, and correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes if we physically do something, it can help us get more in the mindset. So for the example, what I think about is, and this works for women or men, I think, but they often say it with women. If you're trying to boost up your confidence, like right before a meeting or an interview, go into the bathroom and do the superwoman pose, right? So there's something about that physical movement that kind of naturally helps us get congruent with also the intentions. Is that also something you see? Is that something that we can start practicing as well? The reason why I wanted to talk about this is it's hard when you're in the middle of a really stressful environment sometimes to get congruent, to get that right intention that you really want. You really want to express care and concern for the client, the pet, but you've got a lot going on. And so how can we help ourselves kind of release, because you talked about that too, find a way to release it. Well, what about if that's hard? What about if it's hard to find a place to release? Like, what are some of these things that we can do that kind of help with that?
So happy you asked it, because it is hard. There's ebbs and flows in life that are inevitable, and some days are just hard. Like, we get it. And I start with, let's give ourselves a little grace. Just begin there. Give ourselves a little grace. I said earlier, we miss 70% of the information that's available to us on average every day, right? So in terms of self-awareness and self-regulation, the moment that a leader might come to me and say, you know, I'm a pretty self-aware person, that's a red flag for me. That tells me that you're probably not a self-aware person. The self-aware person understands that there are blind spots everywhere. And my attempt at being self-aware is going to grow by stating, yeah, I have blind spots, and I'm seeking feedback. That's a self-aware leader. So let's just start with, give ourselves some grace. We're missing 70% of information daily, so it's okay. The second piece, people don't need us to be perfect. They need us to be authentic. So when we're walking into that exam room and we're emotionally spent, it's okay. You don't need to be perfect for that client. You simply need to be authentic. When we walk into that meeting at the end of the day with that employee who really needs some quality coaching, we know they mean well. However, they need some coaching if they're really going to step up tomorrow. And I'm drained. How am I going to gather the energy necessary to have this coaching conversation that's going to benefit us both and the hospital? But where am I going to dig up this, right? Again, that employee doesn't need you to be perfect. He or she needs you to be authentic. And one of the best places we can begin with our authenticity is by simply stating our intentions. So even if the intentions aren't aligned perfectly with how we feel, that's okay, right? Like, emotions are emotions. They come and go. The intention becomes something we can state. So when I'm walking into that exam room and I'm mentally spent, I can share with the client, I am so happy that I get to sit down in this room with you for the next few minutes and your puppy and not have the noise of everything else. I'm so happy to just be here with one person and one dog. This is a great place for me to be for the next 10 minutes or the next 5 minutes. That's great. You're stating where you're at. My intention is this. In our interaction, and I'm going to ask you some questions, I hope to find whatever it is we need to help Bentley feel better today. I hope to find whatever it is we need to help Preston and you go home happy and healthy, right? We're stating the intention. We're not ignoring the fact that we're tired or completely depleted. However, we're still putting on the table what our intentions are, and that's okay. So give yourself some grace. It's okay to lack a little bit of awareness. We all lack it. And the regulation part, just start by stating those intentions up front. And for the people in positions of leadership, you know, wear the environment is appropriate, you can also state what you're feeling, what the emotions are. You know, I'm really excited to be here. It's been a long day. It's the end of my day. I'm a little tired. And I'm so happy to see your puppy. The puppy is exactly what I needed at the end of my day, right? State your intentions. You can also share those emotions. You're going to sit down. It's a sensitive conversation with your employee and your intentions that you state. You know, this is going to be a conversation that I believe will benefit both of us and the hospital. And my purpose for this is to really help support you in these next steps. And I've got to say, and this can go either way, and you can use both. I'm really excited to have the conversation because I see the positive outcomes that are going to come of it. Or I'm really uncertain about this conversation because I'm seeing positive outcomes, and yet I'm not sure if you're going to see them as quickly. And so I'm a little nervous because I don't want this to be a negative experience for you. I really want this to be a positive and supporting experience. You can state those emotions along with your intentions and then navigate the conversation. Oftentimes what's going to occur, especially if there's a little uncertainty with your approach and you disclose that, what oftentimes occurs is the other person or small group of people perhaps, they end up extending additional grace and understanding for the conversation that's to come, whether it's an exam or a coaching conversation. That's where I'd begin.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. When you were talking about that, I also see on a much bigger scale how helpful that would be if a leader starts with, my intention is truly to build more community, or that I care about you, even though I'm a little bit nervous about sharing this information, or something like that. There is a little bit of humanizing it, but not in a negative way. It is more in I opened instead of closed when I hear that. And so honestly, even in our, I think, our personal relationships too, I think we forget that sometimes we get a little, I hate to say lazy, but you know, we're tired and we know them, they love us, right? And we just start saying stuff. But I think it's really helpful to maybe reminding ourselves, but also, you know, letting other people know, genuinely, this is where I want this to go. Like, this is what my intentions are for this. May not be an easy conversation. Maybe it's a great conversation. I don't know. To be so transparent with that, it helps, because other things about humans is, if you don't give us the whole piece of information or the whole story, we naturally will fill in the gaps. And we rarely bring in the happy rainbows and butterflies to fill in the gaps. We usually go to the worst case scenario when we fill in the gaps. So it's really better to go ahead and say your intentions instead of us assuming them, which again, more often than not, they're usually in the negative direction. So again, I just see how helpful that can be from any type of leadership, big, small, if you're one-on-one with a client, or, you know, leading an entire large veterinary organization.
You know, you're spot on. And I've got to say, and I didn't say at the beginning, so I'm gonna say now, thank you also, by the way, for having me on and having this conversation. I knew when we first got a chance to meet that the conversation would flow well and easy, and I was excited, and here we are, and it's exactly unfolding in that way. And I cannot extend enough appreciation for how spot on you are. You know, our brains have 5 very specific neurologic necessities when it comes to social environments. And one of those necessities is certainty. When we get a present that might be wrapped, some of us might grab that present. What do? We shake it maybe, right? As long as it's not, you know, something barking or meowing, you know, we'll grab it, we'll shake it. Because our brain's initial thought is, well, what is it? Our brains crave certainty. And when we don't have it, that's exactly what happens. What you say, our brains fill gaps, and they fill the gaps with that reptilian part of the brain, which is rooted in survival. Why does that translate into some of the more worst case scenarios? Well, because that's what the survival brain is doing. It's trying to protect us. So what is the worst so that we can back away and create some safe distance? That's not a learned behavior. It's simply the way we're wired. So from a leadership perspective, if we can understand that, we can nurture our team's need for levels of certainty through our transparent communication. Hence, self-disclose, right? This is our Brené Brown moment of the day from Dare to Lead. You know, self-disclose, be vulnerable, put that vulnerability on display as a leader, and you'll be hopefully not overly amazed. Hopefully there'll be some warm expectations and the positive responses you get from your team.
And you have been in the veterinary industry 15 plus years. So of all of your veterinary experience, is there a particular story that stands out to you that kind of demonstrates some of what we've talked about when it comes to leadership, success, trying new things, anything like that?
You know, yeah, there's one that stands out to me, which is a mistake that I made. And I was giving a communications talk for a small group. It was a variety. This was one of the larger companies, and it was a mix from field executives to high-ranking large animal hospital administrators to medical directors. And then we had a mix of licensed techs, veterinary assistants, CSRs, front office managers. Like, it was a wide array, wide mix of people. And in these conversations, we would go on a few tangents. One of them led down this discovery conversation about the reception area of the future. And we were becoming a little more radical with the ideas. One of them being, which I shared, I see an animal hospital future with reception areas that have no desk. You know, desks are there for administrative work. Give me one reason why administrative work is necessary in the sight of clients. Clients don't need to see that, right? The reception area is for a client to be welcomed into the hospital, to have a safe space for them to maybe wait until an exam room is ready, and then to be escorted or guided into the exam room with their pet. That's the reception area. And the way I articulated it, I was really excited because I thought, wow, that would be so cool if the reception area was someplace else for the admin work to be done and the reception area for clients was just dedicated to clients and pets. Eliminating physical obstacles, open space, of course, a cat area here, a dog area there, maybe a bird area there. Like, this would be so cool. And I was really excited about it. The mistake I made was this. I lost the self-awareness in the room for my level of influence. I'm already in a position of leadership by the perception from the room. I'm now the person standing at the front of the room, which elevates my perceived position of leadership. And I'm speaking with a high level of excitement and confidence, which is polarizing my field of perceived leadership. So at this moment, my influence is very high and I lost all self-awareness. Hence, I also lost my ability to self-regulate because I just went down this route. When we broke for a restroom break, I learned that one of the client service representatives who was in the meeting, she was off on the side crying. And I didn't know why. What I later learned was she believed that the veterinary industry and that company specifically was going to begin eliminating CSR positions because they're no longer necessary for welcoming clients, which was the most favorite part of her job. And she loved what she saw in her career for many years being a CSR who gets to welcome clients and their pets. And I, for that moment, flipped her world upside down because she thought her dream was being removed from her simply because I got excited on a topic and lost my own self-awareness. So hindsight for leaders, be aware of the level of influence you have. Your words and your behaviors affect people. And the moment we forget that can be the moment that we cause unintentional harm. That's one that stands out for sure.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and I think that also goes to show the communication aspect of it too, is we may think that we know a lot about our particular area, no matter how many years we've been in it, there are so many people involved, though, that have different thoughts and perspectives that it is very valuable to get that perspective. And when you first talked about it, I was like, wow, that does sound very interesting. But you're right. Like, do we also lose a piece of what is special by doing that? And I love that you did mention your role with supporting young entrepreneurs. And I think that's also something to think about when it comes to change or entrepreneurship or innovation. I'm one of those that I get excited about new ideas, and I'm one of them. Sometimes I'll go off on ideas. But we also have to come back and say, you know, change can be really good for those of us who like innovation and change. But what is it maybe that makes us special? Like, what is it that it keeps us unique? And I think the way to understand that is often to talk to everybody in the hospital to kind of understand that perspective and bring everybody along with us. So, you know, expressing our intention, but also making sure that we take that time to listen to everybody else's perspective too. So everybody gets to come along as well.
Yep. Again, your whys, perhaps even beyond your leadership influence today, because when we think about how to help people feel like they are valued, like their voice matters, when you're in a position of leadership, again, here's some of the low-hanging fruit, things we can apply today, and you'll see positive effects. If you host a hospital meeting in the next couple of weeks, make one commitment. If you don't already do this, make one commitment. And this is for every hospital manager, department manager who might lead a portion of the meeting, every doctor who attends the meeting. When you introduce a topic, whether it's a change or not, just a topic that you introduce, and part of the introduction includes you need to share some information. Before you share whatever your thoughts or perspectives are, or whatever the information may be, ask for feedback from the rest of the team first. And just pause and wait. Hear their voices. Maybe it will influence what you say next, maybe not. Either way, that's not the purpose. The purpose is hear their voices. Give them a platform and encourage them. It doesn't mean all of them are going to speak up. Some may not. It's okay if they don't. Don't force them, but give them the opportunity. Just ask for feedback first, then interject whatever the information is, whether it's leading to a new protocol in the hospital, a new standard operating procedure, it's we're preparing for our next AHA inspection. Whatever it happens to be, lean in with asking your team's feedback first. Hear their voices, help them feel the value that you know they bring to the hospital.
And I think it comes right back to also it helps with our self-awareness too, is getting that feedback. We don't always get it. We miss 70% of the information. And sometimes we need people to help us know the pieces that we are missing. And so sometimes people do voluntarily give you that feedback and may not always be welcomed at the time. So it's probably better to go ahead and be interested in the feedback and ask for it so that you can, one, go back to that self-awareness, but again, also that's also a listening piece. It's also an inclusive piece to bring everybody along with you. So there's a lot of good pieces to feedback. And I have learned over time, because I've been a person that maybe to a fault has been interested in feedback and wanting to know, am I doing this right? Am I doing this a good job? You know, but there are some people that have a negative connotation with the word feedback, and I hope that we can change that. It's not a negative thing. It does not mean feedback does not equate to reprimand. It is really information. Feedback should be information. There's the saying, feedback is a gift. It's not always the nicest to hear gift if it requires us to work on certain things. But man, I would much rather, this is what I've always said, I would much rather learn it as soon as possible than for somebody to tell me a year later, oh yeah, you're like, you've been this da 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 for a year. It's like, well, why didn't you tell me that? I could have worked on it. I think that's it's always been a helpful piece too. Maybe another actionable thing that people can work on to kind of close some of these things we've talked about.
It is. It's a tough topic. It really is a tough topic. Yes, feedback is a gift. We get it. So let's start here for a moment. When I say this, those who are unaware of this, you're going to get it the moment you hear it. If you've ever been in a position of leadership where it was your responsibility to give feedback, especially if this was a coaching conversation or maybe a performance review with detailing a behavior that needs to change, you're going to understand this the moment I say it. The levels of anxiety for a feedback conversation are higher for the giver than the receiver. For the listeners, I'm going to say it one more time. In a feedback conversation, the anxiety is higher for the giver than the receiver. We know the feedback we're about to give someone, and if there's a chance it might be not received well, at least initially, what it does to us creates levels of anxiety and maybe some stress that makes it even more difficult to lean into the conversation. What do we do about that? Like, how do we get into these conversations without finding the need to hire a consultant that needs to come in to help us facilitate this? Well, start here. You want to create a culture of requesting feedback. So, Dr. Spring, something you literally just mentioned that you do frequently, the leadership in the hospital needs to adopt that action with a consistency and over a period of time. And if you do it well, over the course of maybe 3+ months, you'll start seeing some shifts. 6+ months, you might start seeing some new regularity with a new behavior. After 9+ months of leaders in the hospital requesting feedback, you'll start seeing a more specific cultural shift to people being more accepting of feedback conversations. And again, the idea is creating a culture of requesting feedback. And it's not just walking around the treatment area asking someone for feedback. No, you build it into the system. You don't give an annual performance review. Every 90 days, you have a sit down where you can just check in. If your team is small enough and you have the capacity, every 30 days, you have a 30-minute sit down with somebody. At the very least, whoever manages a department will sit down every 30 days with each person on their team just to check in, where both are asking for feedback. There are processes. It is a bigger conversation in general to build it culturally. However, the first few steps are pretty basic. If you're the leader, which includes all doctors, start asking for feedback. Do it regular, do it often, and do it over a consistent period of time.
I think it can be really powerful too. Again, like you said, it often starts with the behavior of the leader, and it can trickle down. Once people see the leadership doing something, it becomes easier to adopt and implement into the culture. So back to the impact that people can have. Technically, it can be negative, but man, when you work on it and your positive impact can have such huge ripple effects on the entire team, the entire culture, all the clients, like clients will feel it. And I think that's what's really special about what you do is you help implement that. You help people understand that it sounds simple, like behavior, but it really is so powerful and impactful. So thank you so much.
Thank you. You're right. It sounds simple. And then what happens? Emotions.
Yeah. Then that humanity thing comes in.
Feelings too. Like the reality of the way we're wired occurs, and it's part of the beauty. It really is part of the beauty. And for those moments where, again, the leaders and the doctors might feel like, gosh, it does sound easy, and the reality is it's not, and I literally don't know the first step right now. Dr. Sprinkle, I'll go back to something you mentioned earlier. That first step can literally be going back to the mirror, and yes, give yourself a power pose. Sometimes it might sound silly, sometimes it might feel silly, but when you get in there and you give yourself that Superman or Wonder Woman, you know, for 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds, and you really look at yourself with this power pose, yes, it does. It has a neurologic shift that can boost your confidence in ways that when you walk into the next room, that room will feel the difference of what becomes a new chosen attitude. It's a nice thought to say we should just choose to be positive. Life still happens. There's a necessity for us to find opportunities to reset. And there's a variety of things we can do that actually give neuro resets. Like, how can I reset my brain? Because it's all over the place right now. You've ever heard of the term shake it off, right? We know the term shake it off. Like, there's songs about it. And I mentioned Janine Driver. Here's a good story about Janine Driver that'll drive this home, and pun intended, and try this at home. If you are confident enough, do it around people. If not, just go someplace where nobody sees you. But it's this. One of the many ways we can literally create a neurologic reset to give our brain more of a, okay, let's start from the baseline and regrow my confidence, get to my power pose, and right, is shaking it off. So when we feel stressed, when we feel anxious, when we feel uncertain, if we have a particular emotion that might be growing a little too much, and we want to reestablish, you know, a good baseline of, okay, we're good, we're calm, we're present, et cetera. Wherever you are comfortable doing it, whether it's in front of other people or you go in the bathroom or the exam room where nobody's at, shake it off. Literally go someplace and shake it off. Janine Driver, one of the world's leading experts in the science of body language, she was leaving a grocery store with her husband. They had just gotten in an argument and her emotions were all over the place. Her husband gets in the car. They finished unloading the groceries. She puts the shopping cart back. And as she's walking around the back of the car, before she walks to the side and gets in, she was shaking it off, right? Like, she's literally practicing what she preaches. One of Janine's girlfriends was on the other side of the parking lot. She didn't see her. So as soon as Janine gets into the car with her husband, her girlfriend calls her and says, "Oh my gosh, Janine, I saw you shaking it off. What happened? Are you okay?" Right. And she's like, "No, I just got an argument with my husband. No big deal. Like, I was just shaking it off so I could be present and more positive for the drive home." So there's lots of little things we can do for resets. That's a really good one. When the pandemic was here and we weren't allowing clients into the hospitals, I remember hearing a lot of hospitals having random dance parties. And I couldn't tell you what great news that was to me, because it was a perfect example of people were literally shaking off a portion of this stress and anxiety that we were experiencing with the pandemic. So whenever the hospitals would stop and have these random dance parties, it was giving their teams an opportunity to shake off for just a moment, a little bit of that tension. And it's such a healthy thing to do. So if you need a good reset, start there. Go someplace where you feel comfortable, shake it off, and start from scratch. If the next step is the mirror, get that mirror and grab that power pose and reestablish some confidence before you walk into the next room.
I love that. People need to rename the bathroom, like power pose room or something, especially for us introverts. When you say dance party, I was so glad to hear that. But like, for me, I'd be like, I'll go over here. So we need private, you know, dance parties. That's okay too. But yeah, no, I love that. I think that's why a lot of people say it's so good to exercise. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you should exercise, but that physical movement, there really is something about it that really helps. If you don't have time to go for a run, shake it off.
Yes, 100%. I love it.
Well, before I let you go, I like to end the podcast with a final question, and that is, what is something that you are most grateful for?
Oh my gosh. I love this question so much. When I do workshops, we always end with an attitude of gratitude, and everyone talks about what they're grateful for. And I always try to go last. And each time, much like right now, I find myself challenged to just go for one thing, because there's so many reasons to be grateful. Right now, I want to say I'm so grateful that my Weimaraner behind me let us have this conversation without interrupting us. I want to say that I'm grateful that the internet has worked well. Like, there's all these little, but the real overwhelmingly, I don't even know the right words right now, the piece of gratitude that surfaces with the greatest emotion for me right now is trust and access. So I'm grateful for your trust and allowing me to have access to your audience. It comes with an appreciation and a respect for the responsibility. Anyone who happens to listen to these words and who can see the nonverbals in the messaging, if there's even a hint of influence, I hope that it's positive. and my intentions are for it to be positive and helpful. And the trust that you've given for this access in believing that this would be a positive experience for your listeners is something I'm very appreciative of. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Vet Life Reimagined. Please check out the show notes for some great references that Rob shared throughout the episode. And this will allow you to continue to learn about the topics that we discuss. We want to thank our subscribers on Buzzsprout, Bayer Consulting, and Will Hughes. Your support is a huge help. There's a link in the show notes if you want to learn how to be a part of that as well. Homebase is our website at vetlifereimagined.com, so please check it out. And YouTube is always a fun place to be, especially for this episode, because he did a lot of visual, verbal, body language cues. So definitely check this episode out on YouTube channel, and please subscribe while you're there. If you want to send me a message, find me on LinkedIn. I'm loving all the great feedback about the podcast. It means so much. I hope to meet you here next week.